Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
All right, welcome to the show. This week's edition of Others Receiving Votes. I'm Pat Forty, joined as usual by Gene Wojciechowski and Brian Fisher. Huge week of college football. We get into the nitty-gritty now of conference races, and we have got a lot going on. It's a massive Saturday in the Big Ten. We've got mind games in the SEC. We have a bedlam of a different sort in the state of Oklahoma. And we will give you game picks for the huge weekend that will help define these conference races and three words you've been waiting to hear. Fat Bear Week. Yes, we will make our picks on who is going to win the fattest bear at Katmai Peninsula. All right, guys, let's get going here. I want to start with the Big Ten. It's a busy, fun week in that league. Four huge games, and we will pick them at the end of the show, but let's set them up here briefly. We've got the whiteout in Happy Valley. We've got Oregon there coming to play Penn State, a top 10 battle. We have undefeated Ohio State going to play undefeated Washington in Seattle in Husky Stadium, where the Huskies never lose. We have USC trudging back into the Midwest, where they get really scared, it seems, sometimes, to play Illinois, which is still trying to pick up its teeth after being run over by Indiana. And speaking of Indiana, the Hoosiers, red-hot Hoosiers, go to Iowa City, a place where a lot of hot teams have gone to croak. So there is a bunch going on. Let's start with the game in Happy Valley. Penn State finally emerges from Candyland after having played nobody in 3 weeks and then had an open date. So this is their first real game, and perhaps against our better judgment, Sports Illustrated picked Penn State number one going into the season, given their inability to win big games. I'm not sure what came over us, but we did it. So it's time to see what they've got against Oregon, which has played extremely well so far. Brian, you're covering the game. What do you need to see from Penn State, whiteout Saturday night, to believe this year can be different and they can actually win it all?
You know, based on this NFL preseason schedule that they've had, something, you know, like in anything at all, almost, you know, that's kind of been the thing. And it's been interesting diving into the numbers in this game, because I think Penn State actually has fared a little bit better when you look at some of the advanced stats going into this game than you would have expected from playing three nobodies. And, you know, looking a little suspect against those three nobodies as is. But this is a game, this is, you know, what do you have, Drew Aller? You know, Penn State, you went into the portal, you got him some weapons, you went out and you landed Kyren Hudson, you went out and got Trevor Pena, you got Devontae Ross. These are those type of games that you need those wide receiver additions, you need your quarterback to step up that is a veteran that has seen a lot of things. This is one of those games where you need that. And I think it is going to be a very interesting matchup in terms of coordinators as well. You go back and look, you paid the big money to bring in a new defensive coordinator in Jim Knowles. He's played Will Stein twice last season, got the better of him in the Rose Bowl there. So I think it's going to be a fascinating game. I am very curious. This is all about Penn State. This is nothing to do with Oregon. This is all about what can Penn State bring to the table, not just because we picked them number one preseason and to win the national title, but this is their biggest test, and not only of the season, but they've got two shots here, Oregon and Ohio State, It's what can you do in these two games? This is their season, and I'll be fascinated to see with that environment in Happy Valley, with that wideout, what they can do and bring to the table.
I do think Bryant does have a little something to do about Oregon, because Oregon is a top 10 team in the AP, and James Franklin's record against top 10 teams in the AP, I believe, is 4-20. So this is a huge deal, and Oregon is a formidable team. Sports Illustrated took Penn State to finish number one. I took Texas. What was I thinking? I'm not quite sure. Maybe just like SI, I'm having second thoughts. But if you'll hang with me on this, I do think there's a similarity, and it all begins with the quarterback. Arch Manning has been incredibly inconsistent, and that's being charitable. But Drew Aller hasn't really done much to distinguish himself. At least the Heisman engraver is not trying to figure out how to spell his name just yet. He played okay against Oregon in the Big Ten championship last year, but he barely completed 50% of his passes, and he threw two interceptions, and Penn State lost. So somewhere in the back of everyone's mind, that has to be there. Yes, they do have Jim Knowles, and yes, maybe he can work his voodoo magic in this game, but I do think that there are legitimate questions about if Penn State can get over that hump, and it's a big one, and this game is at Penn State. That will make a difference, but if you look at it last year, they lose at Ohio State. They lose against Oregon on a neutral field, so they have some demons to exorcise here, and I think Oregon is a team that is not going to be an easy out. And I think they're fearless. And I think this is going to be a real crucible for Penn State. So what do I need to see? I need to see them finally beat a team that matters.
Yeah, that's what we're all waiting for. Here's the one tweak to that, I would say, is they can lose this game and have it not matter.
Yeah.
You know, now you get trucked. That's not good. But in the playoff era, you can drop at least one game to a good team and have it not hurt your chances. The game where I really think will be the Rorschach test for Penn State will be at Ohio State, which is the opponent that has truly bedeviled them. Clearly, Penn State's fans and people that have watched that team for years, decades, waiting for a season like this could be, want to see them look great Saturday night against a good opponent. They want to see, you know, first time out in a game that really is a big test. Okay, can we pass that test? The way the season is set up now, though, this is not must win. Now, for the psyche of everybody involved, sure, that it would be a whole lot better for James Franklin to win the game and for Drew Aller to play well. You guys touched on him. You know, he's a good player, and he's had a good career. And I felt bad for him at Big Ten Media Days when almost every question was about what he hasn't done yet, you know, and the games he didn't play well and the interceptions he did throw and the incompletions. And you know, it's tough because you just feel like his whole career has been, yeah, but. And so this would be a great time for yeah, and. For him to play really well and have a big game. So I would like to see that for his sake. But if you're Penn State, look, you go and you lose this game, I don't know, 28-24 or something like that, you're fine. You're okay. I know the fans don't see it that way, don't want to see it that way. And that is one of the trade-offs that has come with the 12-team playoff, is you do lose some of that massive urgency that comes with every single game. I'm fine with 12-team playoff. We'll talk in a little bit about a possibly even bigger playoff, but there are trade-offs, obviously, to expanding the field and expanding the postseason, and one of them is Penn State-Oregon's a big game, but the loser may not lose that much. Elsewhere within the league, the Pac-12 influx started last year. Four teams came in, obviously, Oregon, Washington, USC, UCLA. Oregon very quickly established itself, won the league, went undefeated in the league, incredible season till they just got trucked by Ohio State in the Rose Bowl. But still, I mean, incredible start to that new era. The rest of them, not so much. This is a big weekend to see if Oregon is going to have company in terms of West Coast impact this year. UCLA is helpless. We're not counting on them, but both Washington and USC are undefeated. They've looked good so far. They've got exciting quarterbacks playing well. Big moments for them. As I said, Ohio State comes to Seattle and USC goes to Champaign. Gino, are the Huskies and the Trojans ready to make an impact this year?
I think one of them for sure is. I think USC has definitely made a believer out of me. And I always sort of laughed when people kept on criticizing Lincoln Riley as if he just forgot how to coach, as if he couldn't develop quarterbacks. I mean, he's only had like, you know, 11 Heisman Trophy winners during his career. So that always amused me. But USC, I think, is absolutely ready for a starring role. And I would not be shocked if they finished as high as fourth in that conference. I think that offense is a problem for a lot of teams. This Jacoby Lane injury thing, how did they describe it? Inconclusive? I've never heard that description before. I still don't really quite know what it means. Is he playing or is he not playing? It sounds totally up in the air. But even without him, they have a lot to like on offense. And there's no Ohio State on their schedule. No Penn State, no Indiana, I believe, and they get Michigan at home. So I think the schedule, for whatever that's worth, sets up for them to be successful this year. UW is growing on me. Demond Williams is he's a hell of a quarterback that I'm not sure most of the country even really knows about. Are they where USC is yet? No, but they're getting there. And if I were Ohio State, I would be very careful. I think this is a tricky game for Ohio State. So, yes, I think both of those programs are going to do the Big Ten proud.
Yeah, I think they're both going to take meaningful steps forward from last year to this year, not just in terms of the adjustment to the Big Ten, but as true teams. And I think even USC would tell you they're kind of more pointing towards 2026. So whatever they get here in 2025, you know, they've got a new facility opening next year. They got the number one recruiting class in the country. They only have six senior starters, so they could have a pretty good team for 2026. That's kind of where things are pointed. So anything they kind of get in 2025 is almost a bonus at this point. But I would point out Waymon Jordan Jr., the junkyard dog. You know, USC rushing attack, that's what's different from last year to this year. They're able to run the ball so far for these first couple of games. That's been the difference. So when you go back to those Lincoln Riley Oklahoma teams, they were able to run the ball. Like, as much as we wanted to talk about the quarterbacks and winning Heismans and throwing the ball all over the yard, that rushing attack was what set everything up. And that's what they've been able to get back to. The offensive line has looked a lot better. You know, they've gelled probably a little bit ahead of schedule. So that to me is probably the optimism in Los Angeles is surrounding that rushing game coming around. And Jaden Maiava taking the next step there at quarterback. I don't think he's necessarily in that class of a Demond Williams Jr. or anything like that. But, you know, he's looked impressive so far against this light schedule. And I think they're going to take this trip to Illinois very seriously. I think they've heard all the talk about their issues going east and playing in those early kickoff games. And anytime they do hit the road, I think they're going to take this game extremely seriously. I am very curious, though, to see what that ceiling is for Washington. Because you go back to Jed Fish at Arizona, it was kind of that third year where they really made that leap. And I think you could probably see that again with this current Washington team. But this is still a team, you look at the schedule, you know, 9-3 is not out of the question there for the Huskies, especially given that home environment that they have to play in. I mean, that's one of the best places to take in a game in the country. And they can use that crowd. They can fuel it. I'm still a little skeptical in terms of what we're ultimately going to see out of that defense. But this is a big test for the Huskies for sure, whether they're in that conversation as well with the Trojans.
Will he be there for a third year?
That is another big question. Yep.
Yeah. Jed Fish is working his way up to being a hot name again, just a couple of years after getting to Seattle. I'm fascinated by that game. And they've won 22 in a row in Husky Stadium, which is a heck of a streak.
Yeah.
Gino, you've lived the bougie life there on ESPN Game Day. Did you ever sailgate? Did you go like hang out in the lake there?
I think you have me confused with like Desmond and McAfee and Herbie. No, man, I was a worker bee.
Oh yeah,
I never did. But it when people ask me what are the coolest places on a football Saturday, UW is always in the top three. It's an incredible atmosphere, a really cool place. You guys have obviously been there. It's one of one.
Yeah, it's awesome. I would like to see a naval battle between the Vol Navy and the Sailgate Brigade from Washington. I'm not sure. I think the Vol Navy is a little more fierce, but those are two places that know how to bring water into the football party scene. I'm fascinated by both these games. Damon Williams is the deal, man. If you haven't seen him, he is dynamic. He is a great athlete who can run, but he can also throw. He's completely fearless. Jed Fish, no hesitation, plugging him in late last year and letting him go. And I think Ohio State better be ready walking in there. And they probably will be. But Damon Williams against the Matt Patricia defense, I think, is going to be fascinating. And then, yeah, USC's looked fantastic so far. The question has been generally, you know, when the going gets tough, does Lincoln Riley's team stay tough? And we'll see this, because I would fully anticipate Illinois scraping itself together and showing some pride after that dismal performance in Bloomington, at least making this tough on the Trojans this time around. So I think USC is a better team. I'm impressed by what they've seen. Mekhi Lemon, fantastic at receiver there. Brian mentioned the running game has revived and they look like a contender, but we're going to see certainly a whole lot more this weekend.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
It's Kelly Clarkson here to talk all things Wayfair, the best place to buy furniture, decor, and anything else you can think of to create a home you absolutely love. I know when I shop with Wayfair, I find options for every style, whether I'm feeling boho or farmhouse, modern, traditional, French country. I can find exactly what I need for my home and more. No matter your space, style, or budget, shop Wayfair.com to make your home way more you.
Wayfair, every style, every home.
Last hit on the Big Ten, guys. Indiana going to Iowa City. And I was there in Bloomington. I've never seen the stadium like that. I've been going to games up there for, oh, I don't know, like 35 years intermittently. Never seen the atmosphere like that, and I've never seen the team play like that. Incredible. I thought it was the best performance I've seen by a team this year and the best since Ohio State demolished Oregon in the Rose Bowl last year. They did everything well. I mean, everything. It was phenomenal. It was impressive what Kirk Cignetti is doing. Possibly unprecedented. He's 15-2 in 17 games at Indiana. The 17 before that, they were 4-13. And that's kind of, they've been 4-13 in perpetuity. They've never been good. And now they're not just good, they're fantastic.
Yeah.
Different challenge here. You're on the road. You're going to play at a place where, you know, Kirk Ferentz, I said in my column, like they're boat racing people, and Kirk Ferentz is he who shall not be boat raced. You just can't do it to him. They make it difficult. So I can't wait to see how Indiana handles that and how Iowa handles what right now is a runaway freight train. You guys, what are you looking for in that game?
Well, go ahead, Brian.
Well, I'm going to be fascinated to see what Indiana does defensively against Iowa. You know, Mark Golanowski coming in, you know, there was a lot of hype around him. Oh, the Iowa finally got a quarterback. But so far this season, we have not seen much of a progress in terms of that passing game. And that, to me, is going to be key in this one. They're going to have to keep up with Indiana scoring at some point. As good as Phil Parker is at defensive coordinator, you know, Indiana's going to put up some points. You know, this is the difference in that team from last year, I think, is you have Fernando Mendoza. They have that added element in terms of not only having a guy that can pick you apart, whether he's in the pocket, but he can move around enough. He's subtle in the pocket too. That was the thing that's you know, strikes me as you know, last year against when he was at Cal, he would take off, you know, a lot more often. This year he's got the weapons. He knows it. He can find those guys downfield. And you combine that with the better offensive line play, the running game. I mean, this is a dangerous Indiana offense, and they like to bowl over people. So I'm going to be very curious. Can Iowa kind of keep up? Can they make this, you know, one of those muddy type of games where they just drag you into to play in a 13-16 type of game in Iowa City, which we have seen top five, top 10 opponents go there and get involved in those type of games. But I think Indiana is a wagon at this point. And you look at that schedule coming up. I mean, they got the bye after this game. They're going to go to Oregon, which now you say that's a much more winnable game in terms of what we've seen so far from the Hoosiers, that they do go to Penn State later in the season in November. I'm not ruling it out to say that this is a potential Indianapolis run for the Hoosiers there under Kurt Cignetti. When you look at that schedule, if they can get one of those two between Oregon and Penn State, then you're talking about, hey, the tiebreakers are going to come into play. Maybe it's Indiana going to the Big Ten title game. I'm just throwing that out there after what we saw against Illinois.
We have fun good-naturedly about Iowa's offense in the past, but I would remind people they did get into, at least for Iowa, a bit of a scoring race with at Rutgers recently and showed that they could score some points if they had to. And during the offseason, I think Iowa's transfer guy was the guy getting more pub than IU's transfer guy. And if you looked at the preseason Heisman rankings, the betting odds, you had to go down 21 names to find Fernando Mendoza's name. He was a 60-1 Heisman odds guy. Now he's a guy who's leading the odds, which is semi-mind-boggling in a way, but he's earned every bit of it. He's been the best quarterback, I think you could say. And to Pat's point, IU looks unstoppable. But Cignetti, more than anything, has brought a swagger, sort of a defiant, screw you attitude to everything. And we're not the one-hit wonders from 2024. We're here to stay kind of thing. And I think that's really cool. And I think it makes them endearing and really interesting and compelling. And Brian went over the games that are coming up. And this Iowa game does feel a little bit like a trap game. And then they have Oregon and Penn State in early November. So they control their destiny. And Cignetti has talked the talk and mostly walked the walk. And this is another step toward walking that walk. Iowa is going to not make it easy for them. And it's a really sneaky, interesting game, I think.
Yeah, can't wait to see it. You bring up Mendoza. His story is incredible to me. He was the number 134 quarterback prospect in the class of 2022. He was committed to Yale at one point because nobody else really wanted him.
Yeah.
Then Cal swooped in and got him, and he was quite good there. And then he gets onto the transfer portal market, and his little brother is at IU and is like, hey, this is pretty cool here and we could use a guy. Come on over. And he's been phenomenal. I mean, that's a guy that all of a sudden is like all over the NFL radar because he's 6'5". And as Cignetti put it Saturday night, he's got a whip. He can throw with velocity and accuracy. And Brian said, he can move well enough, you know, and he's quick and decisive. I can't get enough of the IU thing and the Mendoza thing to this point. All right, we're going to talk SEC now. Mind games are rampant in the league where it just means more. And we are going to count on our counselors, Wojciechowski and Fisher, to help break through some of the mental things we've got going on in this league. Starting with Georgia, Alabama, between the hedges and between the ears of Kirby Smart.
Good
I will
line.
Be covering that game. Kirby has dump trucked the entire nation for 9 years, except he can't beat Alabama. He's 1-6 against the Crimson Tide. For a while, it was a Saban thing, but now, last year, lost in Tuscaloosa in Kalen DeBoer's first year. They were merely down 28-0 in the first half of that game. I was there. It was shocking. They came back and nearly won, but that the start to that game was like many other periods when Kirby has played Alabama, where it just looked like his team is wound way too tight because Kirby wants it so badly that they're just like going out there and freaking out. It reminds me of when Rick Pitino plays John Calipari and his teams consistently freak out. And it just, there's a barrier there that he's got to get past. I don't know whether he has the team to get past it this year or not. Alabama, obviously, I mean, took a whooping from Florida State. Georgia is undefeated, which is great, and showed some real survival instinct to win at Tennessee, but also got really lucky to win the game. And the defense doesn't look like a classic Kirby defense. So, Gino, if you wouldn't mind putting on your analyst brain here, your psychoanalyst brain, tell me what is going on with Kirby Smart and whether he can beat Alabama. Why can't he beat him, but can he this week?
Well, you said he's 1-6 against Bama. He's 107-13 against everyone else. So, incredible. I mean, it's just incredible, the number. What he does to Tennessee, always figuring out a way to beat Tennessee, reverse the roles when it comes to Alabama. I think for a number of those years, it was facing your old boss. There was a, whether or not he would admit it, some sort of intimidation factor. I mean, Nick Saban is Nick Saban. He's the GOAT. And you just can't tell me that didn't make a difference. Kirby Smart is, he's a hellacious coach. I mean, there's no debate about it. And last year's game, you know, Pat, it was 28-0, but there was something kind of semi-fluky about that in a weird way. Yes, Bamba won. I'm not taking anything away from Bamba, but it felt just so bizarre in a way. I think they're capable of beating Bama. I wouldn't be surprised if they beat Bama this week. And yes, you're right. The defense hasn't shown the same sort of quality and standards that it's shown in the past. The right side of that offensive line has been an issue. But I look and see what Kirby did during that game against Tennessee, and I saw a coach who made changes on the fly and showed why he's a really great coach. And I just can't believe that this streak is going to continue. Just can't. He's too good of a coach, and his program is too good to keep on piling up the losses against Bama.
Well, and I think there should be some more, a little more context to that 1-6 record. I mean, a lot of these meetings have occurred in Atlanta for the SEC title game, and a lot of them have come down to Kirby decisions. You know, we all know the fake punt that didn't go well the 1 year. I mean, like there's been a lot of Kirby self-inflicted decisions as part of this series, which I think is kind of going back to that mind games point. But and even that one win, you go back. I mean, Jameson Williams, that injury in the national title game, that kind of changed the feeling in that game. And, you know, late pick six ended up kind of changing the scoreline too in terms of the comfort factor there. But that was a close game, and Alabama had beat them earlier in the year. So it does seem like it is something mental. But the strange thing is that this is going to be the first meeting in Athens that Kirby has played Alabama. You know, that is the mind-blowing stat, almost as crazy as that 1-6. This is the first time they're actually meeting there in Athens. And I think we can kind of go back years ago when Mark Richt had things rolling, and, you know, Alabama came in, that they wore the black jerseys, and Alabama just ended up murdering the Bulldogs. Like that is stuck in a lot of people's minds. So I think there's, as much as it's overcoming Alabama on the field for Kirby and that coaching staff, it's also a little bit of a mental thing as well for the program at large. And I want to be curious to see how they handle that first blow to the gut. Are they going to be able to punch back? And we saw it in the second half last year. You know, they have been proven capable of doing that and competing. So I think he's going to show that film of that first half quite a bit during practice and during the lead up to this game this week. But to me, this is a question about can that offense really make up for a lot of the sins of the defense? Because this is not an elite unit. This is not the talent that we're used to there for that program. I'd even say Alabama has the better, not only talent, but better unit defensively. So I think it's going to be a fascinating game. I would expect a bit of a high scoring thing that kind of redefines what it means to be an SEC defense down there in Athens, because this could end up being a shootout.
Yeah, it absolutely could be. And to the point you made there, Kelee Ringo had the pick six in the national championship game. And I have said more than once that Kirby Smart owes a lot to Kelee Ringo making that play, because the very idea of being 0-7 against Alabama and not winning that national championship would be a bit unbearable. So Kelee Ringo, build a statue to him in Kirby's backyard, at least. The other big game in the SEC in Oxford, LSU, Ole Miss, both undefeated, but we have side drama. We have a little more psychological drama here. We've got Landry Kiffin, Whit Weeks, Lane Kiffin, and Take the Over. Oh yeah, there's a side angle here. Landry Kiffin is Lane Kiffin's daughter. She chose this week to publicize on social media that she is dating LSU linebacker Whit Weeks.
Why wouldn't you?
You know, as one would, sure. Maybe, I don't know, maybe they just started dating. But the week that Ole Miss plays LSU, interesting timing. Could have maybe kept it under the hat for another week. But no, she put that out there. That immediately, of course, took on a life of its own on social media. And people were tweeting about it. And Lane, who likes his Twitter, probably more than he should, but he started tweeting responses to people that just said, "Take the over." I guess thinking he's going to run it up on Whit Weeks and the LSU defense. So we've got love, we've got intrigue, and we've got a good game. What on earth are we really expecting in Oxford, guys?
Gino, do you know the term hard launch? Were you aware of that before this weekend?
No, I have no idea. I still don't quite know what it means.
Well, I think this is another case of Landry not falling too far from the apple tree there with Lane. I mean, they have a fascinating relationship, and makes me feel a little bit old covering Lane when he's back as an assistant back in the USC days when they'd bring the little babies to practice and all that. It's strange to see that they're all grown up now and now making headlines like their old dad does. And so, I think it's going to be fascinating times. I think they love the, you know, tweaking the fan bases like this. This is all in the Kiffin family, Bible, if you will, in terms of the playbook, during these big time games. And I mean, Lane loves to needle everybody. I think it is going to be a fascinating matchup in terms of, all right, can Ole Miss get over the hump? You know, it is still a quarterback who used to play, in Division II, and can he kind of get over the hump in his first big time SEC test against an LSU defense that has proven to be pretty good? I'm going to be fascinated more on the field with this game, but you got to love the Lane Kiffin antics. You knew that was coming at some point this season.
You know, people who are listening or watching this podcast, Pat sent some notes to us last night. One of the questions on his rundown is it ever possible for Lane Kiffin to simply have a normal season? And the answer, of course, is no. It's his oxygen. He breathes a controversy. He loves it. He loves to gig people. He loves to just kind of stir it up. That's who he always has been and who he always will be. I don't care about the personal transformation that he's had. I'm glad he's finding an inner peace and a sort of a core base that he can lean on. That's all great. And anybody who watched Ryan McGee's E60 profile of Kiffin saw a different kind of Kiffin. But when it comes to this sort of thing, he loves it. absolutely loves it. He thrives on it. And I think he does better with it. So can he have a, this is his normal. So, you know, we're really asking the wrong question. This is his normal. When Billy Napier, if and when he gets fired, Kiffin's name's going to bubble to the surface. And that's going to be another thing that he deals with. And this thing with Landry and Whit Weeks, that's another amusing thing that he deals with. But at his core, he's a really good ball coach. And I love watching him work his craft. And so to me, there's nothing to fix here. This is his normal.
It's a good point. It's a fair point. It is his normal. I've seen it blow up in his face a few times, though.
Yeah, that's true.
This is how he operates, for sure. And I do want to see the E60 piece. It does look really good. And I'm happy for Lane if he's, you know, if he's sober and living a better life. Good for him. I hope we don't lose this side of Lane, because it is entertaining and does give us things to talk about on the podcast and write about. So keep being you, Lane, even if that means having your daughter involved in a dating relationship with a linebacker you're trying to exploit on the field Saturday. Okay. It's that time, guys. It's BK Memorial Rant of the Week time. But I have asked producer Kent, instead of playing the BK rant track, we're going with the granddaddy of all rant tracks. Kent, hit it.
Come after me. I'm a man. I'm 40.
There he is. The Stillwater mullet, Mike Gundy, perhaps the most famous unhinged, bizarre rant we've seen in a post-game, or actually in a regular press conference. It wasn't post-game, but when he lost his mind on a reporter about 15, 16 years ago in Oklahoma. We got to pour one out for the Stillwater mullet. Mike Gundy fired this week. We don't have to go along with everybody else and say parted ways or moved on. It was a firing, so we're going to call it that. Gundy, one of the most interesting people probably that we've seen in the sport in the 21st century. A lot to say, I think, here on him. Gino, your thoughts on the end for Mike Gundy and his tenure at Oklahoma State?
Well, first of all, the Oklahoma State release parted ways. I mean, please, we're all adults here. I think we can say he was fired and we're all going to be okay. He did everything he could during this offseason to steer the good ship Cowboy away from the iceberg. He made massive staff changes. He hit the portal really hard. He tried to change in whatever way he could, but it was just simply too late. And if there's any lesson to be learned here, is that every coach has an expiration date at wherever he is. It's just the cruel reality of that business. And Gundy had spent the bulk of his entire adult life at Oklahoma State as a player, as a coach. He had poured every bit of himself into that program. And in that regard, there's so much to applaud his loyalty, because he could have taken the Tennessee job, I think, at one point. What, 2017? He had his opportunities, and he stayed when a lot of other coaches might have left Stillwater. So I applaud his loyalty. I applaud his accomplishments. I applaud that magnificent mullet of his. But it simply was time. And no matter what he was going to try to do, it probably wasn't going to work. So I think it just came to its natural conclusion. And he had a hellacious career there. And it's to be applauded and honored. And I think there should be a statue, and if not of him, at least again of that mullet. But it's time for Oklahoma State to move forward.
Yeah, you know, one of one. You know, I think that's the easy way to describe Mike. And I mean, not only did he mean so much to that program, I mean, he was the defining character of Cowboys football for decades, you know, as certainly as a player. I know everybody wants to talk about, you know, him handing off to you know, two of the greatest running backs we've ever seen. But, you know, he had to make some big time throws in those games for down in the 80s. And I mean, as an assistant, you know, this is a program that he took over that was not great before he got there as a player and was so-so as an assistant, but he elevated them. You know, I mean, they came close in 2011 to winning the national title, which is not a thing you would ever say about a place like Oklahoma State, given the remoteness there in Stillwater, given the resources that you would typically think that they would have. But he made it work, and he made it work until it didn't. And I think that's kind of how we all saw the ending coming for him, because, you know, all coaches are stubborn. But in terms of that stubbornness factor, Mike might be turned up, you know, the knob all the way to the max.
Yeah.
In terms of he's going to do things his way, and then that's it. And he did try to adjust too late to this NIL era, to the transfer portal. Like, it really took away a lot of the issues that, you know, a lot of the success points that he was able to lean onto in terms of developing talent, finding those underrated guys. You know, you couldn't do that in this day and age. And I mean, it was only, you know, two seasons ago that he was playing for a Big 12 championship. And, you know, it's wild to think that the ending came so fast, but that's kind of leaning into, you know, it was his way or the highway. And, you know, to his credit, I mean, a lot of successes, not just that 2011 season. I mean, he's won the Big 12 title before. You look at the ability to find those 10 win seasons with regularity. I mean, I think he's responsible for 8 of the 10 in Oklahoma State history as a player or a coach. Like, this is a guy that is on that Mount Rushmore. It certainly deserves a statue out there. Hopefully they can make that happen sooner rather than later, depending on how the feelings are right now. But happy trails, Mike, and enjoy the fishing the rest of the season. I'm going to be curious to see what he ends up doing next, because I don't think he's one to necessarily sit on the sidelines and just kind of watch college football on a Saturday. He's going to be doing something, whether that's a TV show, whether that's pregame, postgame, something. I hope he gets back into the game, because he is a unique character who you really never know where that conversation is going to go anytime you ask him a question.
Yeah, 170 wins at Oklahoma State. The next winningest coach in school history, Pat Jones, had 62.
Yeah.
That tells you everything about how successful he was and how modestly successful the program has been historically. So he did phenomenal work. I'm not shocked that he goes out this way, because he's a combative guy, and telling him what to do is not easy. Part of what made him good also made him difficult to work with. I mean, he fought with the media. He fought with the administration, sometimes fought with the fan base, sometimes fought with his own players. That's just kind of the way he operated. He certainly fought with Oklahoma. I remember he once fired a contractor who showed up at his house wearing an OU shirt. That became a bit of a tempest in a teapot. Classic Stillwater mullet there. I did once interview the woman who cuts his hair. That was, I thought, a reporting coup. I just went up and asked him at Big 12 Media Day, "Hey, can I talk to the?" And he's like, "Yeah, sure." Unfortunately, she wasn't that good at a quote. I was a little disappointed, but Mike's hair kind of speaks for itself, you know. Not the only storyline out of the state of Oklahoma this week by any stretch. Bit of a bombshell out of Norman. John Mateer, quarterback of the Sooners, probably the Heisman favorite at this point, played through a broken hand against Auburn. Apparently broke it in the first quarter and played really well in the second half to bring him back to win. But he's going to be out several weeks. Brian, we'll see when he comes back and how effective he is. But are the Sooners screwed?
Not quite. You know, I don't think, you know, it depends on the timetable, right? Like, that's the key with an injury like this. And not just can you come back, but how well do you play, you know, when you do get back? Because, you know, anytime you hurt that throwing hand, you know, it's going to take a while, not just a couple of reps in practice to kind of get back that sharpness that you had, especially that we saw these last couple of weeks out of Mateer, because, you know, he did improve, I think, from game to game as a passer there. And, you know, I mean, the schedule the next 2 weeks, you can kind of write that off. You know, they're off this week, and, you know, they play Kent State. But even if they lose Red River, that game's on October 11th. After that, you know, there's a difficult slate. I mean, we always talked about Oklahoma playing one of the most difficult schedules in the country, at South Carolina, Ole Miss, at Tennessee, at Alabama, and then you got Mizzou and LSU to close the season. I mean, that is a murderer's row, if you will, and not only in the league, but if they can go 10-2, I think even without Mateer, I think they still got a shot to get into the playoff, which is crazy to think, but it depends on which of those two they end up losing. And I would point out that Michael Hawkins not an inexperienced guy coming into play. I mean, he was 1-3 as a starter last year, but he was another one of those guys that did not have any wide receivers to throw with. The offense was a mess last year, so I don't really think you can really truly judge him on what he showed us in 2024. So gonna be a lot on that quarter, new quarterback, but this is a good team. They can play some defense, as we saw in that Auburn game. And my question is, can the running game make up just a little bit? Because that was so much of what Mateer was for Oklahoma. He was the running game. Team's leading rusher, had more carries than anybody. This is the thing that I think they're going to have to figure out. They're going to have to figure it out anyway with Mateer in the lineup. Now that he's out there, they've got to figure out, can they have at least a little bit of balance in that run game? They got the running backs to do it. They just haven't seen it so far, and that's going to be kind of the difference between whether you're going 8-4 or you're going 10-2 and having a case for the playoff.
With that schedule, even with Mateer, it was going to be difficult. I mean, a healthy Mateer obviously would make a huge difference. But I can't really answer the question unless you can tell me how long he's really going to be out,
right?
Which we don't really know right now. It's vague. And if you can tell me how well Hawkins Jr. is going to play. And Brian did mention he did start 4 games last year, but there's a reason why Mateer is a starting quarterback and Hawkins was a backup. And so it's going to be difficult for them. Are they screwed? No, not necessarily. They can lose at the Red River and they can lose another game. And who knows? I mean, I think
Gino just cut out on us. We're hoping he will come back. I'll give you real quick my thoughts on the Mateer situation. Pretty much what you guys said, like they're fine until Red River, and then we're going to see what happens, in Dallas. Gino has returned. He's back from Planet Claire.
Well, you want to know my thing relaunched at a perfect time, but I did want to add one last thing. They can beat Texas even without Mateer. I think we've seen that Texas is semi-gettable, neutral field, so I guess anything's possible there. But Mateer has the it factor, and we've seen it throughout this early part of the season. So I don't rule OU out, but if they can hang in there, like Brian said, the committee does take into account an injury like this, especially to a starting quarterback who might win a Heisman. So if it's close, then I think the committee might give OU the benefit of the doubt on this.
Yeah, that's a good point. The injuries are factored in, and if he comes back and he's really good and they're really good, probably no harm, no foul here, even if they lose like a Red River game. Interesting, he was the number 124 quarterback in the class of 2022. Mendoza 134, Mateer 124. Now they're indispensable. That's crazy. How easy it is to figure out quarterback recruiting.
Crazy.
One more thing I want to rant on real quick before we get to winners, steak dinners, and Fat Bear. I couldn't resist. A friend, Ross Dellinger, dropped a story about college football playoff discussions, which are always just so enjoyable to hear all the machinations going on there. And the latest point of discussion, they're looking at having a working group of ADs from the top 4 conferences, Big Ten, SEC, ACC, Big 12. And I'm quoting from the story, as a launching point of the discussion, several Big Ten school administrators are socializing a concept to grant each Power 4 conference league an equal number of automatic qualifiers in a field of more than 20 teams. That also would include potentially one bid each for all the group of 6 conferences. So this I found really interesting for a couple of reasons. One, there's nothing like forced humility to make somebody who wants to try to bully everyone into their way to all of a sudden having to share because they know they're not getting their way. That's what this would appear to be to me for the Big Ten. The Big Ten had the tremendously terrible idea of having four automatic bids for them and the SEC and basically telling everybody else to go pound sand. It's our tournament. Now, all of a sudden, hey, ACC, Big 12, we'll give you the same number of bids as us. And, oh, all you other leagues out there that we've been trying to kill for years, guess what? We'll let you in the tournament, too. Suddenly, whoa, we're all inclusive here because they weren't getting their way. It wasn't working. Tony Petitti's grand gambit to come up with a plan that would help Fox make more money and help the Big Ten make more money was not working. And now all of a sudden you got to go along and get along. And the one thing about this idea I like is having a champion of every league in the tournament. This would be like the NCAA basketball championship, where if you are in Division I, FBS, you get a shot. Probably lose by 37 points in the first round, but the champion of the Sun Belt would be in, the champion of Conference USA, the champion of the MAC, etc. Now, I don't like the idea of a bigger tournament. I can barely tolerate 16, which I think we're headed to eventually. I think we're going to stick at 12 for 2026 and then probably go to 16. I don't want 20. I don't want 24. I don't want 28. And I don't like anything that's just basically a money grab that's passed off as something other than that. But I just find it very interesting, guys, that we suddenly have this kumbaya spirit from the mercenaries at the Big Ten. Any thoughts you all have there before we move on to picking some games?
Well, it's good that they've resorted to bribery to get what they want in the Big Ten. Like that's kind of what we're coming around to saying, all right, well, we got to sweeten the pot somehow for everybody else. And it almost sounded like when I was texting a few folks, it's like almost like an FCS playoff type of setup, you know, which the issue with the FCS playoff is, you know, there's not quite the cross pollination that we kind of get at the FBS level in terms of, we don't know the conference strength for a lot of those leagues. So I don't see where this is ultimately going. Like, you know, I'm with you, Pat, like the expansion of the playoff, like even at 12 teams, you know, they're not teams capable of winning the national title in that tournament. So like, that's the issue. You know, I think that gets lost through all the machinations and all the playoff formats that we threw out there. There's really still only, you know, 6 to 7 teams that you could really legitimately make a case for, hey, they are national title caliber teams. And everything else is just gravy after that. I mean, like if you're a television partner, if you're ESPN right now and you're hearing these reports of, you know, 28 teams, do you really want to be playing, you know, paying up for Toledo at Ohio State to get bludgeoned on some Thursday, Friday, Saturday, whenever it might be that they can fit this into the schedule? Like that has to be taken into account as well. And I'm going to be very curious to see when we're actually starting to going to get that pushback from Fox, from ESPN in particular, in terms of, hey, we're not going to be paying up for a lot of these games that you're trying to, you know, incorporate in this. It's great that you're involving other conferences. It's great that you're coming around in terms of the marketing of this expanded playoff. But at the end of the day, you know, I'm not sure this is something the TV partners want to pay for. I'm not sure it's something that's good for the sport. And hopefully they do kind of come back around to saying, hey, let's just, number one, they are going to stick at 12, I think, for next year. But after that, let's make maybe make it actual meaningful games in the regular season that do have an impact on the playoff chase. Because if we go to 24, we go to 28, that's not going to be the case.
Pat, I'm with you on everything. Just Big Ten, please just give it up. All right. The word that was used repeatedly in that story was socialization. I don't know what that means. It's just such a bizarre word, but that's what the Big Ten now wants to be, your friend. Hi, we're the conference that cares about you. No, they don't. They care about them. And this pretense that suddenly we will give you a little nice piece of the pie, it's ridiculous. The question I always keep on going back to is, what happens if your conference is having a down year and you're going to automatically give teams in your conference that truly don't deserve to be in that playoff an automatic spot? And that, to me, continues to be the sticking point. this idea that they're somehow going to figure this out in time to change it for next year, you're right, Brian. I see this at 12 teams, and I would be perfectly fine if it stayed at 12 teams for as long as, you know, we'd like it to be that way. I mean, I think 12 works fine. And if you want to go to 16, Pat, yeah, I'm like you. I can hold my nose and deal with it. And more than that, I think you start to ruin the whole concept.
Yeah. Well, good. I'm glad we're in agreement, and I will forward our thoughts to Tony Petitti.
Please.
So that we can keep him on the straight and narrow. All right, winners and steak dinners time, our weekly pick'em contest. And oh, look, somebody's making a comeback.
Who would that be?
Somebody's back in it. Pat Forty went 4-1 last week. Brian Fisher 1-4. He's come back to the pack.
Ooh.
So Brian is 12-9. Gene is 11-10. I am 10-11, but closing like a freight train. So here we go. We've already discussed most of these games, so we can be quick through here, but actually picking them. Oregon getting 3.5 in Happy Valley. Brian Fisher will be there. Brian Fisher, lead off our picks here.
I've been thinking Oregon is going 11-1 this season. I think this is one of those games that they do end up dropping, though it's on the road, whiteout. I as much as I want to pick the Ducks, and as much as I think they have the slightly better team coming in terms of how they've played so far, give me Penn State. The hook scares me a little bit, but this seems like a 30-21, 30-24 type of game for the home team. And I'm going to be very curious who starts out well and who starts well fast in that first quarter. That's going to be key to this one.
Under Dan Lanning, the Ducks are 14-2 on the road.
Woo.
They're one of only two teams, along with Indiana. They're on the top 10 in total scoring defense and total offensive scoring. And they haven't given up a passing TD yet this year. I'll take Oregon. Give me those points, baby.
Good stats. However, they haven't been tested yet, and this is a step up. So I am rolling with the Nittany Lions, our number one team. I think they're going to be ready for this, and the atmosphere will play a factor. And I'm taking the Nits. It's going to be close, but they'll cover the 3.5. All right. Seattle, we covered this one. Ohio State giving 9.5 at Washington. Gene, what's your thoughts?
Ohio State's first road game. They've had, we're saying they're coming off a bye week. You don't think they've been prepping for this game when they've been going against Nevada and FIU and Villanova? They've been spending weeks and weeks on this game. The weird part is this line has tumbled. It started at 14 points, has gone as low as 7.5. I think UW is clearly improved from last year. You mentioned it earlier. They are a tough, tough team to play in Seattle. I'll take the Huskies.
I'm going the opposite way, and I think the line movement is telling. You know, I think there's a lot more people buying into what Washington has. I mean, it's Julian Sain's first road game at quarterback there as well for Ohio State, so a lot of pressure on him. That is a tough environment to make your first road start, especially in conference play. But I think chess piece wise, Ohio State number one, they do have the two best players in the country. I think we'll see both of those guys have some big games. But Sonny Styles, Arvel Reese, having those linebackers that can kind of keep Desmond Williams in the pocket, keep him, force him into some errant throws. I think the chess match with Matt Patricia and Jed Fish, some old Patriots assistants, I think it leans in my mind in terms of the Buckeyes covering that big number. But I think this could be an interesting game in the first half.
Yeah, I can't wait. I think it's going to be close. I think it's going to be closer than 9.5 because I do think Washington at home is a deal. And I think that there will be some challenges for the Ohio State offense, which was not great against Texas, if we remember in the opener, but got by because their defense was outstanding. So I anticipate this being a pretty close game. Ohio State wins, Washington covers. All right, the game I am covering, Alabama at Georgia. Crimson Tide getting 2.5. I'll take the Tide, thank you. Past history is being what it is. I think I've got to see Georgia beat them to believe Georgia can beat them. So I'm going with Alabama to not just cover the 2.5, because if you're covering that, you're probably going to win. And I'm saying Alabama is going to win. I think they have really improved dramatically from the opener. Ty Simpson has played great, and there are plays to be made against the Georgia defense. Roll Tide.
Well, I will believe Alabama can win on the road, especially in conference play, when I see it. So I am going with Georgia to cover the number. It is just a field goal at home. I don't really feel good about any of these games, to be honest, because it's kind of those perfect lines where you're like, well, you can definitely make a case for either side. And I do think this is going to be another one of those games that kind of goes back and forth and back and forth. But if not now, when? You know, and I think for Kirby Smart, this is going to be a big one. The atmosphere there in Athens is going to be crazy. That fan base wants to see a big win over Alabama. So give me the Bulldogs to cover the number.
You know, Pat, Bama has played better, but they've played better against Louisiana Monroe and a horrific Wisconsin program. So I'm not convinced. This game is, of course, between the hedges. That's going to make a difference. And Kirby has had 2 weeks to try to fix what's wrong with Georgia. And look, I'm here in Knoxville, and I still get the heebie-jeebies thinking about how they came back and beat Tennessee. I think Georgia can win these kind of games. I'll take Georgia.
All right. And then lastly, we have, before we get to our locks, LSU getting 1.5 in Oxford. The Grove will be popping. We'll see which side. What if Landry Kiffin's wearing Ole Miss gear or a Whit Weeks jersey? I don't know. But really good game here between two teams that have gotten off to excellent starts. Gino, who you got?
Well, we're not, as we taped this, we're not exactly sure what the status of LSU running back Caden Durham is. He's dealing with an ankle injury. If he can't play, or if he can't play at, 80%, 70%, that's going to be a problem. LSU's defense is certainly a problem, but so has Trinidad Chanless been for Ole Miss. He's been nothing short of a revelation. The numbers on Kiffin. Well, Ole Miss is 30-3 in its last 33 home games, 16-1 since 2023. I'll take Ole Miss. Feel good about it, too.
Go, dude. Yeah, I'm going to go with LSU in this one. You know, I think for me, there are question marks around both teams. I think, look, Trinidad Chambliss, he's been great, but at some point, you're going to revert a little bit back to form. I think that the defense with Blake Baker there for LSU, I'm going to give them the slight lean in this one. I mean, it's covering 1.5 on the road. I will go with the Tigers. I don't feel great about it either, but I will go with LSU. I think this is one of those games where Brian Kelly knows what's at stake, not only in terms of the SEC, but in terms of that perception of the program. So give me LSU. I think the passing attack in particular could have a big day for them.
I'm rolling with the Rebs. I love what I've seen from Trinidad Chambliss, and I do believe Lane Kiffin could grab one of those frat boys out of the stands at Vaught-Hemingway Stadium, remove his navy blazer, put a helmet on him, and he'd throw for 250. He's got away with quarterbacks, and I like where Ole Miss is sitting going into this game. So I'm going with the Rebels. All right, lock of the week. Brian, who do you got?
Let's go to Springfield, Missouri. Missouri State.
What?
Yes, absolutely. Missouri State hosts Western Kentucky in their Conference USA opener. The Bears are coached by a former Hilltopper, Bowling Green native, by the way, Ryan Beard. Pat, I believe you have some familiarity with his family. His father-in-law is Bobby Petrino. Big weekend for them with the Hogs hosting Notre Dame. Line open, Western Kentucky given 7. This has been bet down to 4.5, but give me the Hilltoppers in this one. They make life a little bit rough. I would take the over more than anything in this game, but give me Western Kentucky covering 4.5 against the Bears there.
I don't even know they're playing. Where do you get these games? Is this on a schedule someplace?
I was thinking Stanford, San Jose State, but I want to go off the radar for you guys.
Well, I can't mock you, Brian. I haven't won a lock of the week yet. I'm like the unlock of the week. But I'm going to go with a game that people have actually heard of, the Florida State-Virginia game.
There we go.
FSU is a 7.5-point favorite in this. It has a trappy kind of game feel to me, what with Miami coming to Tallytown next week. Virginia has scored a lot of points, granted, not against the FSUs of the world, but I think they can stay inside the spread. I'm going to take the Cavs.
I agree with you on that one. I think that's a juicy underdog pick, and Florida had better be ready Friday night. They don't necessarily always have atmosphere at Charlottesville, but I think they will for that one. I'm my lock of the week. I'm also in the ACC. Pittsburgh at home getting 4.5 against Louisville. Pittsburgh coming off the backyard brawl loss, had an open date. Narduzzi is a good coach as a home dog, or a road dog, really. He's a good coach as an underdog. Louisville, first road game, first game against Power Four competition, so a step up, and they've got some injury situations. We're not sure how healthy some of their playmakers are. Their offensive line has been iffy. Miller Moss, if you get pressure on him, and Narduzzi tends to get pressure on everybody, could make some mistakes. So I'm going to say Pitt at least covers the spread there.
That's a good pick.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
We'll both lose ours.
I'm hot. I'm on fire. I'm coming for you guys.
Right, just okay.
Now, though, the main attraction, we got to make everybody listen long enough, go through an hour to get to this point. Fat Bear Week, staple of a previous podcast I was on. The Katmai Peninsula of Alaska, they put this on explore.org, National Geographic gets into it. You can vote for the fattest bear, and we have 11 candidates this year. We've lost a couple of our other ones, especially ones that had names. Now we're down to like 9 numbers and 2 with names. We got Chunk and Grazer still out there banging around. And then we've got a bunch of numbers. But if you haven't seen it, go check it out online, explore.org. Meet the bears of Fat Bear Week. And you can see their pictures of when they go from when they were skinny back during the summer to now they're fat because they've been eating salmon for weeks. The salmon run is on. And we are picking who we think is going to win as the fattest bear. This is great competition. This is great theater. There is no better competition in America than Fat Bear Week, in my opinion. I am taking 602. If you look there, what an ass on this bear. I mean, what a backside. That bear has been working it. Not only, you know, going up and down the streams, finding the salmon, eating the salmon, building the haunches, incredible work by 602. I mean, talk about something. He got in the weight room this summer, man. He got after it.
Got after it.
He did. So I am going with 602 as the winner of Fat Bear Week. What do you guys got?
I'm going to go with 901. I think that the funny thing about this is you mentioned that, you know, Fat Bear Week is here. You glossed over, Pat, the fact that we got a bracket. We got a bracket this year. Like this is not just a pick your own bear. We got a bracket going on. I got 901. I like the next round matchup that they got going on. They're going up against 32 Chunk. He's got a broken jaw, so I like them advancing in the finals. Got a good draw in that bracket. I'm gonna go with 901. It's a former mama bear. She's the front paws in particular. I think that's the difference. And you can look at the ass. You can look at everything else that's going on with these bears. But you look at how big those front paws are going to get. That to me is going to be the difference. So give me 901 in the contest.
We got actual bracket like an analysis there. This is next level. Next level.
3 things I never thought I'd do in my professional life. I never thought I'd wear makeup. I never thought I'd have to do that bungee death trap thing at the Texas State Fair so they could film me and Jen Latta, you know, almost dying. And I never thought I'd spend a half hour, Pat 40, looking at a website about fat bears. But here we celebrate fatness. We do not fat shame.
We
love the poundage. And for people to know, they eat about 100,000 calories a day.
Incredible.
It's incredible. They can weigh up, 1,200, 1,300 pounds, which is 4/5 of the Notre Dame offensive line, just to give you an idea of how big they are. Brian, I'm embarrassed for you. To ridicule chunk like you did. A bear that clearly is plain hurt, broke a jaw in a vicious fight during the spring. You know what? I want my bear to play hurt. That shows me heart. That shows me something, a grit that you just can't find in any of the other bear. And Grazer, yes, is going for the three-peat, but Pat, I think it's really hard to win three in a row in this competition. So,
you know, find me a college football champion that's won three in a row. It doesn't happen.
Absolutely. So, yeah. Give me Chunk. I'll take the hurt bear. I'll take the one that's plain hurt, and that's the one that's going to win it.
See, this is the analysis you're not getting anywhere else. Keep that in mind, people. We not God. Only will make our fat bear picks, but we will break them down extensively. No. So there you have it. We've got one pick for Chunk, one for 602, and one for what? Did you go 901?
901.
Yep. 901. Okay. We'll be back with the winners of that next week. Make your picks on Fat Bear Week. Enjoy the football. It's going to be an awesome Saturday. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you later.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.